It's time for another episode of Spies, Lies, and Private Eyes. Here's your host, Terrence McCauley.
Iris Yamashita is an Academy Award nominated screenwriter for the movie Letters from Iwo Jima. She is also an advocate of women and diversity in the entertainment industry. Village in the Dark is her second novel from Berkeley. Iris, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'd love to be able to start off and talk about Village in the Dark, your latest novel.
Yes, so Village in the Dark is a follow-up book to my first book, which was called City Under One Roof. So it follows the same protagonist, Detective Kara Kennedy. And both books take place in Alaska. And in the first book, Detective Kara Kennedy is investigating a case that occurs in this very isolated town where, just like the title says, everybody lives in the same building. And it's very hard to get to. The only way in is through a tunnel through a mountain. And of course, in the first book, she gets trapped there. She solves the case, and we find out that she's kind of haunted by the loss of her husband and her son, who she believes got lost in a hiking accident in the wilderness. And it seems like nothing is connected. In the first case is connected to that, but in the second book, she gets some clues that maybe they are connected. And so she'll have to go back to that city under one roof. So it kind of begins with her digging out the corpses of her husband and her son and having an autopsy done to see if, you know, if there was any foul play involved. And so I've told both books in three voices. And in this second book, in Village in the Dark, the first voice, of course, is hers, the protagonist. Mm-hmm. And then in the second book, it's also Ellie Wright is the innkeeper at that city, which I give a fictional name of Point Meteor, although it is inspired by a real city in Alaska. And and she's the innkeeper of that town, and she also finds out that her son has just died, her estranged son has just died, and she's kind of a character. She's like a Bonnie and Clyde kind of checkered past old lady. And they were antagonists in the first book, but now they have to kind of, you know, because there might be some kind of link, then they kind of team up in the second book. And then I have a third voice, and she's from The Village in the Dark, which is it's a woman-led village, and it's off the grid. And this community of women are kind of hiding out from abusive men.
In Alaska.
In Alaska, and yes. So Mia is she's the new character. And she's kind of a dark horse. You don't know how she's connected to this mystery or who she really is.
Right. Well, fascinating. Now, what was it about Alaska that made you want to set these two books up there in the frozen tundra, if you will?
Well, it's kind of like the last frontier kind of, you know, it's the people who are attracted to living, especially in this village, or in the first book, the city where everyone lives in one building. I just imagine some crazy characters who are choosing to be so isolated in Alaska with the weather included. So it was really a great place to set a mystery.
Right. And it also helps you, you convey to the reader that these characters have to have a certain amount of grittiness and toughness to live in that kind of an environment, because not a lot of people would like to live like that.
Exactly. It came from sort of, as I said, the first book, The location, the city under one roof, is inspired by a real city called Whittier, Alaska. But in my book, I fictionalized some things, and all the characters are fictional. So I just gave it a fake name, Point Metier. But the fact that there is a town really like that, and then wondering, like, well, why would you want to go live in this town? Where when I was first started coming up with, or I had first found out about this town, was over 20 years ago, when the only way in was actually by train. The tunnel wasn't open to cars yet. So that's even more isolating. And I thought, well, why would you want to live in a town where the only way in is by train? And, you know, you have to live in one building, and you know, the weather is so horrible during the winter. I mean, during the summer, it's great. I actually stayed there in the summer and it was like,
really?
Yeah. But I certainly wouldn't want to live there all year round, like during the winter.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Because, you know, it's, we have the illusion of living near larger settlements like cities or suburbs, that we have more access to things, when in reality, we're just as dependent on trucks and trains for our goods as the people up in the communities that you've discussed are. It's just a little bit more immediate there. You know, it's a little more obvious there that they're dependent on people coming from outside to deliver goods to them in the towns.
And there, the tunnel shuts down at night at 10 o'clock. So no one can go in or out after 10 p.m.
Wow.
And that's, you know, that's kind of, I'd be scared if that was the case. And they do have avalanches, and there have been times when the tunnel has been shut down. So completely. So yeah.
Wow.
I don't think I could do that.
No, me neither. No, that would be too much like being in prison, which is not something I want to experience this time in my life. But yeah, that's, but it's, it makes a great setting for a book, doesn't it? Just like, and the tension and the thrills are right or inherent to any kind of story like this, because, you know, it's the isolation and the remoteness, and it's the same as in your kind of book or in a movie like Alien or Aliens, where there are these people who are in this confined area and they have this problem they have to solve if they want to stay alive. And I think that's a great device you were able to implement in your books.
Yes, so that is a huge factor in the first book. It's very claustrophobic. You know, everything is a tunnel. You have to go through the tunnel, through the mountain, and then the building itself has tunnels underneath. So it's, you know, it's a very claustrophobic place that's perfect for a mystery. And I actually, when I was, because I had visited the town, and when you go through the tunnel, it felt to me like I was falling down a physical rabbit hole, and that where I would end up would be this strange wonderland, and it would be full of these quirky kind of wonderland-like characters. And that was sort of the jumping off point for me. And so a lot of my characters are quirky, I guess is the word, very odd.
I can understand that, yeah. Yeah, they definitely are, because it takes a certain amount of person to live in the extremes. I mean, we see, you know, in the news, you see news about quote unquote Florida man. And because there's, you know, they do a lot of crazy stuff down there. Some people attribute it to the heat and the humidity down there. And then, of course, you get people who have the equivalent of cabin fever in the winter in a remote place like Alaska. So it's great that you've been able to explore the colder climes of that same phenomenon.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And I did, in the first book, I peppered it with sort of Alice in Wonderland references. If you're looking, you'll find it. If you don't, it doesn't matter. It's not important to the story. And in the second book, I had so much fun with that. So in the second book, I continued that, and I used a lot of references from Alice Through the Looking Glass. So if you're a fan of Alice in Wonderland books, you might find some references in both books.
Great. Yeah. And I know that readers love finding those Easter eggs in our work, don't they?
I think it's fun, and you know, I if someone finds it, I get something that they you know they identify with the books, then I'm really thrilled about that.
As you should be. And also too, it's great that you've seen the, I'm sure, the popularity of the new HBO entry in the True Detective, I would say, series of mysteries, that it's now set up, and that's also set up in a remote place in Alaska.
I've heard, I have not yet watched it, but I've heard, and yeah, I should definitely check that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think you may we may start seeing more books set in extreme settings, because it's definitely something that I think the audience can enjoy and appreciate, especially coming out of a pandemic like COVID. We can all relate to getting a little bit of cabin fever after a while, and that relatability is always good for the story that connects with its readers.
Yeah, that's funny that you should mention that, because I started writing it before COVID, the first book. And, you know, I just wanted to explore what it would be like being sort of trapped in this sort of setting. And then COVID came, and I thought, okay, now everybody knows what it's like to be trapped and sort of isolated because of because of COVID. So I mean, I think it's interesting. I don't know if it makes it, if that makes it more identifiable. I think I've heard some people say it does, because you're more aware of community, of your community that you live in.
Right. And that's what also is an important part of any of these kinds of mysteries, is that the audience has to get a sense of whatever the community is that the author is writing about, whether it's a locked room mystery or a drawing room mystery, or it's a mystery like the one that you've written. You have to have be able to understand who the characters are and relate to them in order to care about the story or invest much in the story. And it sounds like you found a really unique way of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I think about it, community is very important in both books. Because in the first book, obviously, if you all live in one building, and you're isolated, you kind of have to rely on each other, even if you may not get along with each other. Because I can imagine, like, being trapped in a building with people that you might not like all of them, but you still might have to depend on all of them. And it's the same in the second book, particularly in The Village in the Dark, where it's this community where they're isolated, and it's run by women, and they have to take care of each other, and they all have responsibilities and rules, and they've kind of developed their own rules in this isolated place.
That's a very interesting take on this entirely. Now, this is the second book in your series that you've created. Do you envision this going into a third or a fourth book? Because it sounds like you've built quite a world here.
Well, because I only got a two-book deal, I made it a two-book series, part one and part two. But I wouldn't say that I would never go back to this world. I could go back and write another book, but for now, my idea for my next book is in a completely different setting, but hopefully still an engaging setting.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I'm sure it will be, because you did not pick an easy topic for remote Alaska to appeal to people, and it certainly has, and for good reason, because it's a beautiful, both of them are beautifully written. And books that flow very well. And you might think that the pacing could be a little bit problematic in such a remote setting, but it isn't. You do a great job of keeping it moving and not letting the reader get bored for a single page. So I congratulate you on that.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
No, it's a great, it's tough to be able to do that. I know you said that it's also too, it's difficult for a writer after two books to try to move on to something else. And I'm fascinated and happy that you're looking to do something completely different for your third book. Is there anything that you can tell us about it, or is it all type secret at this point?
I think I want to keep it secret at this point because I've only got an outline. I think if I were further in, I could talk more about it because it's just an outline, it's almost like it's not real yet.
Right. And that's fantastic that you, yeah, I get that. And I'm so glad you said that, because a lot of times we writers want to overshare our ideas, whether they're firmly cemented in place or they're just nation ideas. And you show a lot of wisdom and say, you know what, it's not ready for prime time yet. I'm going to keep it to myself until I know what I've got. That's a fantastic answer. It really is.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense. And it's good for, I know some people who are thinking of writers listen to this. It's good for them to understand that just because you have an idea doesn't mean you need to share it with everybody immediately.
Yes. But I can't share that I am working on another project, but it's actually an audio series. Ooh. And I've just found out that it's been greenlit, so I can kind of happily say that it's planning to air for BBC Radio, and it will be hopefully in the fall. But it's a period. It's a World War II drama, and it's about 40. It's about the 442nd, which is a all Japanese American regiment that fought in Europe.
Wow. What a great story to be able to bring to us in a different medium too, in terms of audio. But, and it's going to be like one of the old style radio plays, right? With that has
yes.
actors.
But
isn't it fantastic?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's sort of coming back in style now, like with podcasts being so popular, and now they're having sort of dramatic audio podcast series. So it's fun. It's exciting for sure.
It really is. And that'll also be up to a whole new audience of readers as well, who I'm sure are going to find your latest entries and love them just as much as your current readers do. I was wondering how people can follow you on social media, see what's going on with you, find out about the latest stuff that you're working on.
Yes, they can go to my website, which is irisyamashita.com. I'm sure my name is spelled somewhere here.
It will be, yes. Yeah.
So it's myname.com. And on the website, I have links to my social media, including Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, fantastic. Well, there's going to be a lot to follow up on, and you've got a lot of great projects working. So I congratulate you on what you've done and what you're going to do in the future. We really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Great. Thank you for letting our listeners see a little bit of your process. And to my listeners, thank you for joining us once again for another edition of Spies, Lies, and Private Eyes right here on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. We'll see you next time, everyone. Take care.
You have been listening to Spies, Lies, and Private Eyes with host Terrence McCauley on Authors on the Air Global Radio Network.